So this morning's practice marks the beginning of the second week of our Angha, our peaceful dwelling place, our come-as-you-are open house retreat, where people come and go. And it's so great to have you all here at this moment, the ones who have thus come, bodhisattvas, tathagatas, buddhas. We've been exploring for the first week, the section of Dogen's Bodhisattva's guidance dealing with giving, with generosity. And we've had some quite moving talks and Dharma dialogues about the essence nature of Dogen's teaching, which really is, for me, about seeing through the delusion that anything is separate, that anyone or anything is not me, that there is somehow some exclusionary policy that makes some things Dharma and some things not, some people bodhisattvas and some not. Seeing everything as the self means that the self that is attached to the ego, I, the one that makes the concept of me or mine, is seen through as extremely limited. And yet, of course, in the way that Zen works, even this little self that says I, me, and mine is the whole thing. There are no loopholes, no gaps, nothing that isn't it. So Dogen keeps pointing to this over and over again in this beautiful text, this set of instructions that he wrote for his lay practitioners. And this morning we begin exploring the second part, which we read earlier during our sutra service. So here, I'm just going to focus on the first two paragraphs of this second section. Kind speech means that when you see sentient beings, you arouse the mind of compassion and offer words of loving care. It's contrary to cruel or violent speech. In the secular world, there is the custom of asking after someone's health. In Buddhism, there is the phrase, please treasure yourself, and the respectful address to seniors, may I ask how you are? It is kind speech to speak to sentient beings as you would to a baby. So I want to first focus a little bit on what I believe Dogen is pointing to when he talks about kind speech and say some of the things that it isn't, in keeping with the first section that we've been exploring on generosity and this recognition that there's no separation. And then I want to talk a little bit about those two phrases that he mentions, please treasure yourself, and the second one, may I ask how you are. So it's very important to know that kind speech is not currying favor, which is something that Dogen says right at the beginning about generosity. That is, it's not being nice. We're not talking about saying things to compliment people or to pat them on the head or to maybe make them like us. We're not talking about, one of my favorite English words, which I almost never use, is the word smarmy, because it sounds like what it is, a kind of groveling, which is the original meaning of the Japanese phrase that is translated as currying favor. Groveling, being kind of, you know, I don't know, syrupy sweet. There's a lot of that in the world right now. A lot of trying to be nice. And I would suggest that Dogen is pointing to something that is different than that. Something that has to do with a recognition, a compassion, a feeling with another person. Seeing that the other person is, in fact, just right. No need to make anyone else anything other than what they are. no need to make yourself, as we've been discussing so much, anything other than what you are. Everyone else can see your Buddhahood, your Bodhisattvahood, at least if they're looking for it. Everyone shines with their own light. But of course, we forget that in the world of division, in the world of right and wrong, of praise, of praise and blame. The word that is translated here as kind speech also means loving words. So there's this quality of loving to the encounter with another human being, another sentient being, as Dogen says. Everyone we encounter, everything we encounter is it. So how can we help but be kind and loving? Well, I mean, we're human beings, so we can easily help be kind and loving. We can be nasty and mean and critical. And yet, all those things, just human. They too can be bowed to. They too can be treated with kindness. This is the really important work of a bodhisattva, to see that everything that arises can be treated in a loving manner. Even the most hateful self-talk that we have, everybody in here, I'm sure, does this at least once in a great while, says, you idiot, or how could you do that, or why can't I be like this? So in loving speech, we see that arising and go, oh, there you go, criticizing yourself. Uh-huh, yes. Nothing more than that. Not trying to correct, not trying to make it different, although if we correct and make it different, then again, another opportunity for loving words, kind speech. And these words and speech, they're not just words. They can be actions. When we come into the Zendo and before the round begins, we bow to each other. That's also a form of loving speech. We have a lovely commentary that Dosho Port sent us from his teacher, Katagiri Roshi, about these bodhisattva methods of guidance and about this loving speech. Katagiri tells a really sweet story that illustrates what he understands as loving words, as kind speech. And I certainly resonated with this story myself. Before I tell the story, I'll mention that the resonance in me arose from my great enjoyment of our big granite Buddha statue outside. When it arrived at the temple through a set of unusual circumstances, and some of you know the story and some of you don't, but I won't tell it this morning. I fell in love with it immediately. I just love his face. I love the way he just sits there. He's there all the time. When I'm going to off to work, or when I'm going shopping, when I'm still sleeping, he's sitting there all through the night, all through the day, with this great look of benevolent happiness. It's the only way I can describe it. So whenever I get a chance, even though I know, I don't want you to think that I'm losing it in some way. I really know he is a granite statue. He's not a real person. He's just a representation of a person who we think lived 2,600 years ago. But I don't know, I just invest him with some mirror-like quality that reflects back to me my own best self. So whenever I leave the temple, I give him a little bow. Even if I'm in the car, I just, look over at him and do one hand. I keep one hand on the steering wheel. And when I come back, he's always waiting. It's really cool. And some of you who come and go from the Ango, from Sashin, from sittings, know that when you drive into the driveway or walk into the parking lot or bicycle in, he's there. He's just sitting there, just 24/7, never taking any time off. No breaks for the Shakyamuni Buddha statue. So I greet him, and sometimes if I get up early enough, I light a stick of incense for him before sitting in the morning. And there's some comfort for me. I just love that. I love the recognition of that. So when I read the story that Katagiri tells, I thought, oh, right, I get this. This is my experience, too. And when I saw that it's a part of loving speech, of kind words. It really, really touched my heart. So the story is about the Eiheiji Monastery, which is the monastery where Dogen, the author of this text, in the 13th century lived, and where generations of Soto practitioners have lived. And at this monastery, there's a position called the Jishin. And the Jishin, which, by the way, I think it means the self-heart. This person is in charge of taking care of a statue of Dogen that sits in one of the halls at Eiheiji in Japan. And every morning, the monks at Eiheiji get up at 3 o'clock, but the Jishin gets up at 2 o'clock, and he gets a little bucket and some soap and a towel and some water, and he bows to the statue of Eihei Dogen, and he washes his face. And while he's washing his face, he says, "Good morning," just like that. This word, "good morning," in Japanese is hushin, and it's the word that's translated as, "May I ask how you are," in our translation. But according to Katagiri and some other sources, it's a word that means good morning. Hello, nice to see you. And then in the evening, when everybody else has gone to sleep, this Jishin, he comes back to the figure of Dogen, and he bows 3 times, and he says, "Good night." And that "good night" is the same word that is translated in our translation as "please treasure yourself." It literally means take good care of yourself, value yourself highly. And it's an idiomatic expression, actually, that's used in Buddhist circles in Japan. It literally means at night, precious treasure. In other words, good night. In English, we say good night, which has a derivation that's very similar. The goodness of the night, we might say. So this precious treasure, this reminder that, as we say in our Kanon Sutra, in the morning and the evening, always with us, always with us. So we say good morning, we say good evening. The good morning has another translation, which I thought was just really terrific. The literal translation, which is not the idiomatic translation. The idiomatic translation really is, may I ask how you are, how are you? It literally means, in the act of filial piety, that is, in the act of being a child of the one I am addressing, I must admit that it is not totally clear. Isn't that great? In the act of filial piety, I must admit that it is not totally clear. The idiomatic expression translates to, may I ask how you are, according to Katagiri, good morning. So another translation from some other people who translated this text say that this means, I do not know everything in detail. And just sink into that for a moment. I do not know everything in detail is a way of saying good morning. I don't get it. Now what? Good morning. Hello. You wash the face of the Dogen statue. You light a stick of incense to the Buddha statue. You roll down the window and with one hand say, see you later. That's all the same thing. I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't have a clue. So this, all of this, good morning, good evening, I don't know, what is it? All of this is a way of practicing loving words, using words to express the deep connection between all beings, between beings who are sentient, that is, the grass, the flowers, the animals, the birds, you and me, everyone who's ever existed in the past and everyone who will ever exist in the future, the great mystery of existence that we are inextricably a part of. To them we say these loving words, good morning, good night. Please treasure yourself. Thank you. So now's the time for our Dharma dialogue where we get to treasure ourselves out loud. So please make yourselves comfortable. And we'll go around and say our names. No need to rush. Just one name at a time. I'm Melissa.
Steve.
Fran.
Laura.
Good.
Yeah. Jonathan.
Eddie.
Steve. Paul.
Tua.
Ken.
Julie.
Jason.
Diane.
John.
David.
So please, any comments, questions, anything that's rising up for you, could be about the talk, the text, your sitting practice.
Just amazing translation of good morning, you know, as out of filial piety, is that it, you know? I'm hopelessly confused. And it reminded me of that, I think it's Rumi poem, where I wake up and I'm so worried, and then the poem goes on, you know, don't go read a book, you know, go do what you love, and there are thousands of ways to bow down and kiss the earth. So kind of, I had that same feeling while I'm, you know, I'm hopelessly confused. Watch Dogen's face. Yeah. So, it's a lovely image, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. I love the connection to the Rumi poem, too, because when I first found that poem, you know, I couldn't believe that Rumi, who also lived in the 13th century, probably didn't know Dogen, because they lived in different parts of the world, that who I had idolized in a way, you know, as somebody who must have it all together. He says, every morning I wake up, I'm lost. I don't know what's going on. It just was very comforting to me. There's something really reassuring. And then to read that this, you know, it's an idiomatic expression. In Japan, people would know it means good morning or how are you. But, yeah, it's such a... I don't have a clue.
Yeah. It's just so wonderful to think that we all wake up thinking, I don't have a clue.
Yeah. And it's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Mm-hmm.
We think we're filling in our little head, you know. So here's people from the 13th century, same thing, you know.
I'd like to thank you for all the etymologies. But going back more to the beginning of your talk with how kind speech should not be currying favor, it strikes me that I think with a lot of us, I mean, certainly with me, it's not a matter of currying favor, it's a matter of protection. You know, often we become, we try to be soothing and kind, and we want people to like us because we don't want to be hurt. You know, I'm struck by the image of dogs and wolves, and how in a pack they'll fight with the alpha male, and then they'll roll over and expose their belly as sort of a sign of, don't hurt me. You know, I know where you are, and please.
Yeah, and so then, from that, then this kind of kind speech that Dogen's talking about takes a certain kind of courage, because so often we use our kindness to manipulate the world so that we don't get disturbed, right? I'll make the water smooth so you don't do something that upsets me. So thinking that, so then kind speech is something else than then what is kind speech if it's not making nice?
Well, you could imagine it being, it seeming to be harsh. You could imagine it being, you know, it's the classic Rinzai shouting at you or slapping you with a stick and being grandmotherly at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, that it strikes me that what you're both talking about is, you know, and that protection and it, that a wall goes up. It's like you don't allow yourself to be seen. I think one of the things that really struck me about this part of the text is, I didn't mention it, but there are a few more talks to come on it, treating everyone like a baby, you know, and with a baby, and actually in some of the translations it's like your baby. And again, it's another idiomatic expression from China. It's how you treat people, as if they were your precious child. And sometimes with your precious child, you have to say, cut it out. Right? So it's that kind of, like, and then there's the other piece. If you put up a wall with your baby, you know, you won't know what it needs. There's no connection. Right? You have to just keep opening. And seeing through the false quality of that wall. There's no wall. Another construction.
Thank you. Thank you.
One of the phrases I heard years ago or read is that it's dangerous to see unless you're a sage. That even the looking, meeting somebody else, creates so many images in our own mind of, you know, protection or fear or domination or trauma, whatever, you know, things just keep coming up, even the act of meeting. And so the first line there, he talks about raise a compassionate heart or whatever, you know, for me means is that to know that all of this stuff is going to come up, that you're going to feel scared or haughty or proud or, you know, all this stuff will come up, and you keep looking. You don't stop at what you think you are and what you think they are, because you miss it, you know. So it's just this continuing to look, which leads into the I don't know, you know, I have not a clue, is the best way to honor, you know, the relationship. You know, I'm not going to cement it with, you know, good and bad, up and down or whatever, but it's just a continual looking beyond what arises to the mystery that which stands before us and that which we feel within us. So, it's dangerous to look unless you're a sage, so keep looking.
Steve?
Yeah, so we're telling stories about kind speech. Many years ago, almost 4 years ago, I worked in a hospital as an orderly, and I unfortunately got to see a lot of people die. And one of the more difficult things for me at that point was hearing a story about a doctor who went into a room where a man who had advanced lung cancer was with his family, and the doctor just unceremoniously told him that he was going to die, that the lung cancer was going to kill him very soon. And it was pretty devastating to him and to his family. And I think that the nurses and the rest of the staff, including myself, had to spend quite a bit of time with him and his family trying to help them deal with this sort of very abrupt announcement. Now, don't misunderstand me. The doctor was doing what was responsible. All right? The doctor needed to tell the man that he didn't have very long to live and that this was his fate. You know, this was going to be what would happen to him. So this was not necessarily cruel, but it wasn't kind. It wasn't, to me, it wasn't recognizing that very human piece of us that just doesn't want to give up. We don't want to die. We don't. So, to me, when Dogen talks about kind speech, you know, he doesn't talk about, you know, putting on a pretty face or, you know, making the world anything than what it is. You know, you can't, really, if you're being honest. But on the other hand, you know, we're all here as humans, you know what I mean? So, so that's what I wanted to say about that. I think that Dogen has put his finger right on it, you know. Sometimes we deliver what we need to deliver, you know. We last night I said something to my sister rather abruptly, you know, sort of like the doctor in my little story here, and I've been plagued by it for the last 12, 14 hours about, you know, did I really deliver this the right and in kind of way? So, that's what I have to say.
Well, and these last two comments really make me think about this, the treasure of Sangha that we talk about, the community. And we've been talking a lot about how wonderful it is to sit together and how much we support each other and how sweet it is, which is true. And then the other side of Sangha is that it involves irritating human beings, as our families do. And we might say unfortunately, but it's not unfortunately, that in the in what arises between us and another human being, there's some opportunity. And then this invitation to practice kindness, we can't make it into a rule. We keep wanting to say, okay, we'll just smile and make nice is not it. So there is some commitment to authenticity and truth and fearlessness in this, and kindness and compassion. Sometimes we talk about prajna, the sort of wisdom cutting through, and the samadhi, the depth and just receiving. And our practice is always needing both. Our lives are needing both the willingness to step forward and said, when you did that, I was devastated. And the willingness to step on someone's toes sometimes. So many of us suffer from what I call terminal niceness, right? That my highest good, and actually growing up, it really was my highest good for many, many, many years, was being nice and not creating disturbance. And to begin to see that that's actually not very kind to myself or to other people. But yet some balance required. How do we be authentic and compassionate? Quite a koan, because we can never get it right. No matter how good we are, we're always going to say something in the wrong way. Oh, I didn't mean it like that. But then that is learning too. That is love too. Now.
So these words come now from one who, despite concentrated efforts, has not mastered the art of speaking so as not to get people upset. I have not mastered the art. Somehow it just seems to be in the wind that I'm not an unkind person, but that I will get angry, or something that will get somebody upset. And in the Metta Sutta, in the Sutra on Loving Kindness, it's very, very early in the Sutra, so it's given sort of place of pride. It's, you know, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let him be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech. And this phrase, straightforward and gentle in speech, is kind of, I think, somewhat the knife edge that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. I know that I have three people that I've been training and managing and trying to teach to do what I can do. And I've stepped back from doing it myself, teaching people. And there are many, many times when a lot of correction is necessary. And if I do anything else less than be completely straightforward or leave anything out, then I'm not doing them any big favor, really, or anybody any big favor. And at the same time, I have to find a way to do it surrounded, not necessarily cotton candy, but, you know, surrounded in something that makes it clear this is not about my emotion or my irritation, but it's about a common goal that we share. It's difficult to do. I think that to look at it as a skill, I mean, I can't get a ball through a basketball hoop either. I mean, there are a lot of things that I can't do, but it's not that I keep practicing that particular one, but there are others that I can't do that I keep practicing because I don't have any choice. I think the only thing else I want to say is that the thing I'm so grateful for, the thing that is indispensable to me in my life, is to have friends for whom kind speech towards me does not mean refraining from giving it to me straight. Without that, I would be lost. I know I can trust David and Melissa and Jason and a bunch of other people in this room to tell me when I'm talking too long, like now. when I lost my way. And so that's almost the kindest speech of all. And people have done that instead of resorting to anger, or instead of just breaking everything off, or just throwing it out, trusted me enough to put in the correction. And then my job is to find a way to, however the correction is put, to transform it within myself into something that I can say to myself that is gentle and straightforward, even if it doesn't come at me that way.
Yeah.
Great.
God, what you said just pissed me off so much. I just don't, it's nothing that you said, it's, no, I'm kidding. but you know, I do want to say how careful we have to be with this section, that it's not an instruction manual about skills, right? And that really the attitude of compassion is the attitude of non-separation. You know, I think about the doctor in Steve's story. He was straightforward, and on some level, who knows, maybe he even was gentle. Maybe he didn't. This is a total fantasy because I have no idea. It was a long time ago. I never knew him. But maybe didn't have that sense of connection. And really what unites all of our comments is the great suffering that happens when we lose the sense of connection. You know, when we have to put up the wall so that we won't be hurt. When we discard parts of ourselves because we don't like it, like what Ken was pointing to, the that feeling of thinking, you know, some parts of what we say aren't okay and some parts are, and that to be gentle and loving to all of that too, it's really important to not make these divisions, and then when we do, to see that that's it too. So please don't use this as an instruction manual. Now I'm going to practice being gentle and straightforward. Instead, the practice is in here. Can I see that this other person is me? Then when I say something, even if it's really off base and hurts them, you know, then I keep going with that. You know, oh, I get hurt too. And on it goes. I think we just blunder through the world, learning over and over.
So I can just understand what you're saying, Melissa. What you're saying is it's important things to cultivate, you know, where you're coming from.
Right.
Sometimes you need to let the chips fall where they fall.
Yeah, and the text you quoted, you know, is from the early days of Buddhism. It's not a Zen text, so it's a little bit more do this, do that. Mm-hmm. You know, we sometimes get that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I was just reminded of an experience I had when I was rowing. I used to do sculling, and I was just learning how to do it. And fairly early on, I had a coach some of us were working with, and he took video of us rowing. And after we rowed, we were walking back up with him, and we were going to watch the video of ourselves rowing. And I said, gosh, I'm really nervous. I feel kind of embarrassed. And he put his arm around me as we were walking. He said, don't worry, I'm not here to judge you. I'm just here to criticize you. Oh, okay, just criticize. Oh, that's fine. But it was that sense of non-separation.
Yeah, right. He put his arm around you.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And Steve. I think that you're kind of addressing the thing that I was trying to put words to, where, you know, this idea of, you know, being able to, I guess, criticize is a good word, people's behavior without judging the person as being wrong, because I noticed that, you know, coming up for me a lot, that I, you know, I act in ways like, you know, I'm expressing to someone, you know, how could you do that? You know, you're bad because, you know, you're acting in that way, rather than, you know, seeing people as being okay the way they are. And of course, sometimes, you know, behaving badly or needing instruction. But the fact that someone behaves badly or needs instruction doesn't make them a bad person. And it's very easy to come from that place. But, you know, this reactive thing that I get into, or you know, how could you? You know, that's, you know, I wouldn't do that. You know, that's just wrong what you're doing there. You know, and I often find myself coming from that place with people, and most of all with myself. You know, I think, Steve, how could you do that? You know, that is just wrong. You know, and as I was bowing to the Buddha statue this morning, and I was thinking of all the many mistakes that I make in the forms that we hold together here. And I was bowing to the Buddha, and I was thinking, I really hope that Buddha can see, you know, that I am making these mistakes with a pure heart. You know, and
by the two, you know, when we do these mindful listening activities, exercises, like I was just doing, with listening and really trying to get into your story and listen all at the same time to my own feelings, as I've been doing with everybody here, consciously. And when the monk is washing Dogen's face, and he's saying the statement, and I can't remember the exact statement, but the filial love, and then the I don't know. It seems to be doing both of those things with that statement. It seems to be a practice. It reminds me of a practice of that this is just, it's I'm asking you about you, but I'm also, I'm acknowledging in the fact that I don't know. And it's the same thing. And it's done with love. Like you were saying, as the sun was coming into the room. I remember what you were saying a little while ago, Melissa, talking about when we were communicating these things, doing it with love, and then the sunlight started coming into the room. I noticed it was nice. Just around that time. But I like the practice that this monk had, because it reminds me, it's like a reminder, it sounds to me, if I had a practice similar to that, of listening, wanting to know, or like we've translated it into good morning, which is, in my perspective, a wish for somebody. Good morning. Good afternoon. I hope you have a good afternoon. And at the same time, it opens up a discussion so the person can share how their morning was, if it was good or not, or what's going on with it. But I like the practice element of that, that we're asking, that we're listening 50% to ourselves and 50% to who we're talking with. That's all.
Thank you. Julie.
Kim's comment about seeing got me thinking about eye rolling and its verbal equivalents. being apparently one of the most powerful forms of unkind or cutting off connection, communication. There was a famous study where they videotaped a bunch of married couples having problems. And they found that the single greatest indicator of whether the couple would eventually divorce was whether they were eye-rolling. It illustrates a real disdain. And I was thinking about in relation to your story about the good morning question. The good morning question is, I really don't know how you are. I don't really know who you are. There's, you know, and what eye-rolling says is, I know who you are, and you're just going to do that again. We're doing a lot of eye rolling about some of the top administrators at our university right now, so it's a reminder to not freeze him into that position where I think I know it.
Yeah, and so I don't know in some ways can be about myself. I don't know what, but also a real acknowledgement and respect of I actually don't know how it is for you. I actually don't know. And the great gift of that, and how that cuts through this delusion that everyone else in the world is just a slightly defective version of us. Yeah. And if only they would be more like us, and we can help them.
So, just listen.
So there's a bowing down to this mystery of otherness and a respect of opening to something we don't know. I might know who you were yesterday or the moment before or for the last 20 years, but I don't know who you are today. And the gift of that both to self and other, like, because all of us have some pretty fixed opinion of, you know, oh no, me again. You know, as you're referring to our own unkind speech to ourselves, I think is where this is rampant. Wow, what if, you know, we could bow down? So David, how are you? Who are you? There's a lovely openness. I don't know.
So many people have been really nice to me when I've been here, like helping and guiding. And then just before the sitting, it looks as if you were looking for where to sit, and then I wanted to be helpful also, so I thought you maybe knew coming in here because I haven't watched all your faces, so I don't know who's here. I didn't know who was here, and then I said, I know this one, no one is sitting here, and And you said, you want me to sit there? And then I said, no, I'm sorry. But I wanted you to sit there. I wanted the comfort for another person sitting there. And then you're sitting there in front of your
Well, here I am. It worked out. She was very nice. I'm just sort of wandering around the room. It wasn't just where to sit, it was where to be. And she was very interested. She said, why don't you sit here? And I said, well, do I have to sit there?
So the point to being a baby or being felt like being a baby, it's also allowing other people to help you. And it's...
Yes.
It's a really beautiful environment here. Yeah.
Well, I love so much what you're saying, Lana. Did you have more that you wanted to say? Because in your gesture of kindness, even if it was misinterpreted or whatever, you discovered something more in it when through the misinterpretation. Like, the misinterpretation is not a problem. Miscommunication even is not a problem. But suddenly you realized, I want you to sit there. Wait a minute. And of course, it's not what you meant from your head, but this arose. This arises in us, and it's so. There's something about how the world offers itself. You know, in this quote from Mary Oliver that we like so much, that it's always offering. You know, this is what Dogen points to too. It just constant. Offering, and we really don't know, you know, back to that line, I don't know what's going on, I have no clue, but, and we act, and we get feedback, and then it happens, right? Yeah, it just amazes me.
Well, and I like how we don't know, we don't even know what we're doing. Right? We think, oh yeah, well, I'm here because... but part of our sitting is entering into a world beyond our story. Entering into a world that's much richer and I think much kinder than our own story. Much more trustworthy. Yeah, how lovely.
You know, Dave, I was thinking when you were talking earlier about... you know, not knowing the other person, and you know, the opposite of the eye rolling, as you were saying. A lot of Tibetan teachers will say that we really do know each other. You know, that, and what we know is that everybody just wants to be happy. There's this sort of bottom line, although we might talk about it differently. So it's both. There's some. It's another both and thing that I hadn't really seen so clearly. Because when I look at another person, you know, from the eye of connection, and of course, Ken's right, all kinds of crap arises. You didn't use that word, but, you know, but then the continuing to see, just continuing the practice of seeing, it's so clear to me that everybody, you know, I think about little babies, and that they just want to be happy. They're screaming and crying and pissing and pooping in their diapers, and you know, and they just want comfort, and we all grow up from that place. Every one of us has been that baby, and we never get what we want. And the whole basis of Western psychology is that it's never enough. When, you know, mommy doesn't come in time, at least once, not a million billion times, and so we do have this longing in us, and that we don't. I think in this practice, the longing for comfort, happiness, you know, whatever it is touched over and over again. That we find the longing precious. It's like a really important thing to want, to long for. And the whole thing is really important. So I'm just, yeah, do you want to...
Well, it's just, it reminds me, a friend of mine got a bulldog puppy. And the puppy was so wonderful because you would come in and all the puppy wanted was your love. And so he would come in and go this, and then it would go up like this, so you could... and I think, you know, all of us humans are like that too. Please just love me.
It's like you've had some practice. Yeah.
This is not any different than what's been discussed, but one of the images I often have is two people getting to know each other. In the beginning, you can know a lot about a person, but as you get more and more intimate, the less you know, and the more silent you can be. You know, so our knowing isn't what we're looking for. You know, it's the connection, the intimacy, in which there is no words, and there is just presence. You know, like not wanting to be anywhere else but there, not knowing why, not even caring why. So it's just that, you know. So the more we know about somebody, it's sort of a clue that we're quite distant. So looking beyond our words, our images, just I got some more looking to do. So.
Well, and just as you're speaking, I'm struck that what we do in Sangha is we start from that silence. We don't start from the getting to know you, and what do you do for a living, and you know, where were you born, and blah, 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 what's your favorite color? Just, we all sit here in silence. So we kind of skip that part. And that is why some people say that in sitting like this, there's such a feeling of intimacy in the Sangha. But I don't know you. In that conventional sense that you're pointing to, Ken. I never saw that before. We skip right to the good parts. Although, it's all the good parts. Yeah. So maybe we'll end there for today. Thank you.